We are coming to you from the Pop Culture Man Cave.
A.K.A. your bedroom.
Yes.
Your childhood bedroom.
It really is. I'm thinking of remodeling.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the Fortress of Sparkitude, as I like to call it.
I'm sure your parents will enjoy that.
Yeah, they would assume that I'd be leaving.
No. Yeah. Just have people come in and, like, add a toilet in the corner of the room. Just turn it into a house.
Well, what I was thinking of doing is mounting the TV to the wall and getting rid of that, you know, television stand.
That'd give you a lot of space.
I want more space. I was thinking of getting rid of the furniture as well and buying new pieces.
This is nice furniture.
Maybe like two Bioras?
Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. That's the brave little toaster, Emilio Sparks.
That is I. And that is Mr. Cry because it's Wednesday, Mike Bongiorno.
I cry whenever I can. It's an emotional release and it's good for you.
Do you feel better after a good one?
Absolutely, don't you?
I wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know?
No.
It's sort of like an emotional orgasm. You just feel like so good after a nice cry.
Now, do you do the quivering lip and the sucking of the air like the...
No, I never get... Whenever it's like a, you know, pop culture or like a movie or a book or something, it's a single tear.
Okay.
It's a single tear that goes down my cheek. Does this bother you in movies and TV? When people cry, it's always a single tear that goes down the middle of the cheek?
Yes.
Because number one...
It doesn't exist.
Right. It's always in the corner... Like next to the nose. Nothing goes straight down your cheek. And also, real people wipe their tears. No one lets unless you want to be super like emotional and you're trying to be emo for everybody and you want everyone to see your tear.
I would like to do that, actually. I'm not going to front.
Be able to cry on command?
Yes, but I would do it.
Well, as a sociopath, I think it would be a great skill for you.
I want the one tear to trickle down.
Yeah.
And I would just leave it there.
Really?
But I also have a beard. So I assume that it would just get sopped up, so it wouldn't even look like
it would
I would
just
cry.
Your beard would get extra salty.
Like my life. Oh. For more information on Pop Culture Man Children, please go to the Instagram at Pop Culture Man Children. Mike does a really good job.
I do a great job
of curating that account. I like to call them bunny ears.
He did air quotes, bunny ears, as he said, curate. It is a curatorial endeavor.
Well, see, that aggravates me on social media. I've seen people on their Twitter and Instagram headlines say curator. You're taking somebody else's work and putting it on your social media page.
Well, I always give credit when I can.
You do, but for the most part...
I'm not like
people
fat Jewish who steals people's jokes.
And made a career out of it.
Right. Until he was caught.
Yeah, yeah. And he still gets checks off that.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the infuriating
part.
Well,
it's all about aggregating information. When I put something on the Pop Culture Man Children Instagram, I think, is this on brand? Is this something Animal from the Muppet Babies would like? Would he touch it with his little felt finger and give it a heart?
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. Shouldn't it be stuff that you want to post, not something that you automatically think, wow,
I imagine our audience
should.
Is Muppets.
Okay.
I imagine Muppets on treadmills listening to us. The reason I don't have a personal Instagram anymore is because the heart of – I mean, it's you and me together.
Yeah.
But I feel like in some ways the nerdy nucleus, the core in the middle of Iron Man's chest of Pop Culture Man Children is my inability to grow up. I never put anything up that I wouldn't put up. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I've seen certain people. I've had conversations with certain folks, and everything is a calculated post.
I'm not one of those people.
There's no spur of the moment, and I don't even want to say originality in certain things. And I think this is my disdain with just social media in general. Like, I've been reading a lot of Douglas Rushkoff lately, and he's been talking about how social media now is just based on presentation. Like, you're presenting something. You have to show everything. But you do it in a way that it becomes more a farce than who the actual person
is. Well, it's performative. It's performative. It's like Andy Warhol said we'd all get 15 minutes of fame. And it's sort of like, it's not 15 minutes, it's not time, it's space. What we all get is a little bit of real estate on the internet to sort of live our lives digitally and say, this is who I am or this is what I'm promoting. I try not to do that. I just go from the heart. I put stuff up that I like. That's how I do it.
I saw a lot of 2017 best of posts.
Well, that's what this is all about. And I'm glad we're not doing that.
And I was infuriated by that, because why do you have to show people what you've done? Why can't you just do the job or live your life?
Well, what it's your own best of, that's weird. But if you're like doing like best movies of, or if you're doing like a thing.
See, that's what it is. It's people showing the best of their work. Or like the Instagram top 9, where they've showed the best 9 photos that people liked on their social media. They make it a collage. It's literally almost my entire timeline. I refuse to do
Maybe
that.
Maybe you need to take a social media break.
See, I'm glad you actually proposed that question, since we talk about pop culture and society and the idea of pop culture. How does one take a break when it plays an intricate role in one's daily life?
I don't think it does play an intricate role. We've allowed it to. You can put it down and just do something else.
We do a podcast. People are now starting to listen to this podcast. So if I take a social media cleanse, I can't promote said podcast.
If you want to take a week off, I'll take care of it. Oh my God.
Basically, I'm a product of everything that I hate because I have to sell the soap a podcast.
Boy, you are triggered today, my friend.
But does it make sense?
It does make sense. I know that you have like 5 podcasts besides this one.
Yeah. It's a job.
Maybe hire an intern. Maybe get a desk to put in the corner of your bedroom in your mom's house and just have some high school kid work there. They'd be like, kid, are you Instagramming? 5 tweets a day. 5 tweets a day.
Oh, my God. That would be genius.
No retweets. Retweets don't count.
And I'll get them one of those small little TV trays as a desk.
Sure.
And just let them put their computer on that. Listen, they can get all the free Wi-Fi they want. I'll supply them with drinks.
Right, right. Who cares? Your mom's paying for the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, right?
So if you want to apply for internship at Emilio Sparks Industries.
Yeah, tweet me at Emilio Sparks or drop me a line, theexperience@EmilioSparks.com, or you can even Snapchat me.
Send your resume over.
You don't even need a resume. As long as you understand or grasp the idea of what a Twitter and Instagram does, come aboard.
The internet can do anything except nuance. You know, it's a very hyperbolic machine. Sometimes you think it's a 50-50 argument when it comes to a certain topic, but it's not. Like, with The Force Awakens, you think, oh, people either love it or hate it. But if you look at the numbers of who's seen it and what people say about it, most people like it or love it. And then there's a small group of very angry people who are haters of it. And I think it would be wrong to let them steer the conversation into this movie's a bad movie. Or this movie has been received as bad.
That's another gripe that I have with the idea of social media. Everybody now is a critic, and everybody is a doer. Nobody's a spectator.
You realize, as you say that, you're on a podcast where we critique things, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
But we have a license to do so.
How so?
You, as a film professor, went to school.
Well, I'm an adjunct.
You are a professor. You went to school to study and analyze film and media. You are a pop culture specialist. This is what you do for a living. This is what you get your paycheck for.
I am a media gagfly.
I am a radio broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a broadcast journalist.
You're a producer of many.
I'm a producer of many podcasts.
Myriad podcasts.
Exactly. I've gotten checks for such things.
Yeah.
So we have the right to do so. Somebody on Twitter with 10 followers and an egg as an avatar
an egg
should not critique something. They should just watch something.
I'm going to disagree with you, my friend, because I believe that everyone should have a voice. I just feel like you as a consumer need to be wise in whose voice you listen to.
Exactly.
Everyone gets a voice, fine, but I'm not going to take your voice that serious. I also think that you and I are more forgiving. Like, we've only done, you know, what, 10 episodes, something like that? We haven't really hated on too much in this show. And I'm sure there's stuff we have hated on and we will hate on. You and I are not coming from a sort of Reddit neckbeard perspective of, I'm angry because my childhood's ruined and let me tear things apart. We're not that. We have a pretty analytical perspective and a pretty positive perspective. Not positive like we're going to like everything, but positive in the sense of like, you know, this stuff is sort of like candy. You know, we're talking about candy. I'm not going to bemoan that my life has been ruined because of a Zack Snyder movie.
I think that's the crux of this conversation, is why hate on something when you could enjoy something else? We can have a intellectual discussion about something and not like it, but not eviscerate it.
Right, right.
So anyway.
Let's get to the news. In a surprising move, John Williams is going to do the music for the soon-to-be-released Han Solo movie.
I like John Williams.
I mean, who doesn't like John Williams? But this is a real shock.
Why?
It's 5 months away, and we've been reading stories and rumors that inside Disney, there's a lot of fear that it's going to fail.
Why?
I think because The Last Jedi didn't do exactly what they wanted it to do. I think it's a shit show. I think they hired Ron Howard to try to fix it, but he did not do what they wanted him to do. They say the kid who plays Han Solo can't act. He's got an acting coach on set. Basically, they know what they've got, and they've got a shit show. Because Rogue One wasn't done by John Williams. It's done by somebody else. And John Williams doesn't have like a long-term contract. He basically does movie by movie. It's kind of shocking to me that he's going to do it. Although, I don't know if it's going to make the whole thing hold together, but
I don't think a soundtrack can hold a movie together. It has to be with the dialogue.
I mean, he's so good that he can almost hold a movie together. Like, if you look at Star Wars Episode 2 or Star Wars Episode 3, those movies are so poorly directed that I think John Williams' music almost serves as like a narrator function. It like keeps it together. You know what I mean? He's sort of telling us this is what you're supposed to be feeling in this moment, because he's making up for what Lucas can't do.
He's had 50 nominations for an Oscar. He's won 5.
Wow.
He's had 6 Emmy Awards. He's won 3. He's been nominated 25 times for a Golden Globe. He's won 4.
Okay.
67 Grammy Awards. He won 23.
Wow. All right, so this is a difficult question. What is your favorite John Williams theme?
It would either be Superman.
Uh-huh.
Jaws.
Uh-huh.
Or the iconic Star Wars. Dun, dun, yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Jaws, I think, is brilliant in its simplicity. It's like the mind of the shark. I would put maybe Superman or the Force theme from Star Wars.
Why? Wait a minute. Dun, dun.
It's brilliant, but think, he also did Indiana Jones. He also did all the Harry Potters. He also did...
Yeah, but what plays on emotion more,
E.T.? Well, the Jaws theme is brilliant, but I wouldn't... You know, it doesn't... It creates a tension, but when I hear the Superman theme, it makes me... Like, I like to listen to the Superman theme when I'm lifting at the gym, because it makes me want to be the last son of Krypton.
I think Jaws is just more fitting because it plays on emotion more, where even when the shark is
not it's not emotion. I don't think it's emotion. It's
you don't think that song plays on emotion? You don't tell me your anxiety raises every time you hear that before you're about to see the shark?
Well, yeah, it has an emotional affect, but I don't think it's like... When I think emotion, I think like the E.T. music makes you feel like childhood and wistfulness, whereas the Jaws theme is almost like... us character. It personifies the shark. When you hear it, you know, the spectator knows the shark is present, even though the shark might not be visually on the screen. I mean, it definitely makes you feel tense.
So what else is in the news, sir?
Marvel's launching a new animated franchise called Marvel Rising.
What's the first cartoon going to be?
This is an article from Patrick Hypes from Deadline.com. Marvel Entertainment has taken the wraps off Marvel Rising, what it's dubbing a new multi-platform animation franchise featuring the next generation of superheroes. It will feature the likes of Spider-Gwen and her new secret moniker, Ghost Spider, along with Miss Marvel, who is the first Pakistani superhero, Squirrel Girl, Quake, Patriot, American Chavez, and Inferno. The plan is to launch 6 4-minute digital shorts focused on Spider-Gwen beginning next year, followed by a feature-length animated film, Marvel Rising Secret Warriors, to premiere later in 2018. I'm down for more female empowerment. I like Miss Marvel. I've read a lot of her books.
I like Squirrel Girl. I watched her on an episode of Ultimate Spider-Man on Disney XD.
I don't know anything about Squirrel Girl.
I don't know anything about her either, but it was just... it was already in there. There was no... plot context.
What is
origin
her power?
Story. I guess she could talk to squirrels.
I'm down for it. I love it.
I just like that she was this oddball She wasn't even swooning over Spider-Man, but she was just amazed at the fact that Spider-Man was in the same room as her.
Yeah,
so she wanted to step her superhero game up to be next to Spider-Man.
That's fun.
So I like the comedic levity.
Yeah,
that.
Have
I read anything that she's in? Unfortunately, no. Kat from Comic Trips, our good friend, put me on to a ton of Spider-Gwen and Gwenpool.
Yeah, so,
so I've been reading a lot about that, and I look forward to them making, and I'm going to use a wrestling term here, making the whole Spider-Gwen or Gwenpool franchise one of their top baby faces.
Okay, okay.
Because I think there's a lot of marketability in that character. I think that they can do animated. I think they can do a television series or a movie. But I think a television series would work better because I would like to see that more.
Yeah.
You know? And I want to propose this to you because the CW does all the DC-based teen dramas that deal with superheroes.
Right. But they're more fun.
The only Marvel television shows we get are the ones on Netflix and now the ones on Hulu.
The Runaways, I think, is kind of younger. It's about teenagers. It's got a more sort of young, fun thing. Maybe when Disney does their streaming service, they'll have Marvel shows like this. I've never read Spider-Gwen or Gwenpool, but I have to say that just from seeing the character all over comic book shops, I think that Spider-Gwen is probably the best superhero costume there's been in like 30 years. It's an amazing costume.
See, this is the thing I want to ask, but we have to maybe get people that do cosplay. Do you think now that the women are over-sexualizing the idea of Spider-Gwen? Because from a feminist perspective, you would want a superhero of the female proportion to be as equal as a man.
Right.
Why would you want to over-sexualize the female counterpart to Spider-Man?
The argument sort of in feminism has always been whether or not you're being exploited by becoming sort of the sexual image, or you're owning your sexuality, you're being positive, and you're saying, I too, as a woman, have sexuality and I'm allowed to sort of thrive in that arena. So I know some cosplayers and I've talked to some cosplayers about coming on a minisode. So maybe coming up in the year, we'll do like a cosplay 101 with some cosplayers and we'll ask them all these questions. Okay, so this is a true news story and I don't know what to make of this, okay?
What's up?
Ryan Reynolds has been cast to play Detective Pikachu.
Wait a minute. Say that again, please.
Ryan Reynolds.
Deadpool.
Has been cast to play Detective Pikachu. There's a lot of words in that sentence. Let me try to break it down for you. Because I'm not a Pokemon guy either. So, Detective Pikachu is a specific Pokemon game that's popular where you like solve mysteries and Pikachu helps you.
But Pikachu says one word.
Not when Ryan Reynolds is voicing him.
He says...
And I think he might also be mo-captioning him. Although, isn't Pikachu like a tiny little thing?
Yeah.
Well, Ryan Reynolds is your new Pikachu, everybody.
I don't understand that, though.
Detective Pikachu.
Why would Ryan Reynolds want to play Pikachu? All it says is Pika or Pika Pika or Pikachu.
I have no idea.
Will he talk?
We'll have to
this?
Ask our friend Vin Forte from Cartoon Buffoon because he interviewed the screenwriter of Detective Pikachu. So he might have greater insight to this.
But he
For
doesn't
any
talk.
Any Pokemon
though.
Fans, I think he talks in this specific game. This is not your regular Pikachu. This is Detective Pikachu, understand? This is Pikachu as an investigator.
As an investigative reporter. So he's fucking Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Not a reporter, just investigator.
So he's an investigator.
But he does have a little hat that he doesn't normally have.
Because he's...
He's an investigator.
He's an investigator.
He's a private eye.
He's a gumshoe. He's a private dick.
He's a gumshoe, exactly.
Yeah.
That's all I got for that story.
Is it supposed to be a crime noir kind of thing?
God, I hope so.
Like where it's done in black and white?
I have. There's very few details other than the casting
of this. And it's like the novels of
Raymond Chandler?
Yeah. Who, by the way, I love. The Crying of Lot 49 is a really good book.
I've never read any of his books.
Oh, my God.
I've seen a lot of the movies based on his stuff.
Dude, his books are great.
This is a more serious story than we normally do, but I had to talk about it. Saudi Arabia is going to allow movie theaters for the first time in 35 years.
So how are they getting their movies prior to this?
This is from the New York Times, okay? This is by Alan Cowell and David D. Kirkpatrick. in the latest in a series of gestures towards modernization that would have once seemed improbable. Saudi Arabia announced on Monday that it would allow commercial movie theaters to open for the first time in more than 35 years. The moves to allow access by early 2018, part of a broad campaign by the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to transfer Saudi society, followed measures that would give women the right to drive and that would allow concerts and other forms of public entertainment. Although, here's the answer to your question. Although satellite television and video downloads have made the ban on commercial theaters all but irrelevant. So they were getting streaming stuff. They just didn't have public places to go and see movies, but now they do.
Now, does it say on there why they were banned for 35 years?
You know, obviously it was a very conservative culture, and it was a belief that movies were sort of a corrupting influence, that movies were depraved. So they're getting movie theaters for the first time in 35 years, and I guess another big headline here is women are going to be able to drive.
Now, this opens up a huge market, too, now.
Yeah.
That's going to change the numbers for these for every movie across the board.
Right. But because of the conservative nature, there's going to be probably a fear of cultural imperialism. So they'll probably make a lot of their own stuff now. And there are certain things that they probably won't accept, you know, things that might be explicitly sexual.
Well, I was just reading right now. They said that the projected revenue is over $24 billion, which will bolster the creation for more than 30,000 jobs.
That's pretty cool.
And especially if they're going to do their own films.
Yeah.
You're opening up a whole new market now.
That's pretty awesome.
I think that's great.
You ready for this segue?
Yeah.
Going from women being able to drive in Saudi Arabia to She-Ra, the Princess of Power.
Which pretty much bankrupted He-Man.
I disagree. She-Ra is being rebooted for Netflix.
So is it live action or animated?
She's going to be animated.
The Princess of Power.
She's back, baby.
Woo!
She's going to be up against Hordak. Let me say this. And look, I love Skeletor.
Hordak's a slept-on villain.
Exactly. Hordak is a much scarier villain.
Oh, my God.
And he's also way more powerful. Like, Hordak's basically kind of a Star Wars Emperor ripoff. Whereas Skeletor, like, basically Prince Adam, his mother for the rule, and Skeletor is always trying to take over. Whereas in Etheria, where She-Ra lives, the government's evil, and Hordak is their evil dictator. So he's a much worse, more powerful bad guy.
He's a totalitarian.
Yeah, he's a fucking Kim Jong-un, and the Princess of Power and her best friend, guy with the heart on his chest, I forget his name, and the bow, they're going after him with the power of love.
With the power of love.
Yeah.
The only difference is between Hordak and Skeletor is Skeletor has way better puns.
Well, Skeletor's got that great voice.
You blundering bloodheads! you're idiots!
You fairy fool!
Hello, He-Man, you moron!
Hordak was like he had that, like, he sounded like he was like, he had that thing from the dentist in his mouth the whole time. You know what I used to do as a kid? Remember Hordak had, like, he would have cannon arms?
Yeah.
I used to put a plastic cup on my hand, and I'd be Hordak with the cannon arms.
He had a better squad, too, of, like, those villainous robots that would, like, destroy.
Oh, yeah. They didn't have legs, right? They were, like, kind of like tops.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a better rogues gallery with He-Man, but Skeletor was right to abuse them because they were useless. Like, Beastman sucked. Like, Beastman is interesting, but in terms of his batting average, one of the worst villains ever, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't even, like, follow. He's worse than Bebop and Rocksteady.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, because Bebop and Rocksteady could at least, like, if Shredder said, hey, Bebop, Rocksteady, go kidnap somebody, they'd at least get that right. Where Beastman couldn't do anything right.
He did some things right. There were times when he...
You fool!
There were times when, you know, he apprehended Teela.
Teela, she was another badass back in the day.
See, there's so much I want to talk about with this.
Well, on our next segment, we'll talk about the toys that made us, and that'll lead us into a He-Man convo.
All right, so before we go to break, I'm going to ask this question. Will Michael Buongiorno be getting She-Ra toys?
Oh, do you want me to answer that, or you want to tease it for the break?
I want to tease it for the break.
Okay. Here's what here's what they should listen to over the break. I have the power from the He-Man She-Ra Secret of the Swords movie.
Wow.
Somewhere out there, someone needs me. I don't know how or where, but please. I have the power. I have the power, so can you. We'll be back.
Someone needs me. I don't know how or where, but believe me. I walk the universe to find her. For better or for worse, beside her. For the honor of love, by the power above, I have the power. I have the power.
And we're back. This is Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC with ES and MB.
Here we
follow
are.
Follow us on the IG at Pop Culture Man Children.
Yeah, I think the kids say Insta.
Is it the Insta?
The Insta.
I always like to say the Gram.
The Gram, okay.
But we're really old, so we
we don't know what goes on.
Can't say those things anymore.
Yeah. You know? Like Steve Buscemi in that 30 Rock episode. We're like, hey, young people. Hey, fellow kids. What are you guys doing on the Insta?
So, before the break, I proposed a question to Michael Bongiorno. Since She-Ra, Princess of Power, will be a new Netflix original series, will Mike Bongiorno be getting the toys?
Of course I am. Let me tell you this, unless I've already told you at some point.
But how are they going to make the toys?
I had the originals.
Now,
I had the dolls, I had the pink castle, I had the pretty ponies, I had even the She-Ra costume. I was a super woke kid.
So wait, where is all this stuff now?
I have no idea. I wish I still had my She-Ra and He-Man toys. I remember when I was a kid, we had a green book bag that was filled with them, and I dumped them out on the floor. And God knows where that stuff is.
And you know, people would step on them, or they would throw them around.
Oh, we treated them like garbage.
Hot garbage. And to think back, and let me tell you something. You had to, and that was the beauty of He-Man and G.I. Joes. There were so many.
Yeah.
That you had to get the different ones. Like, we had to get Satman. I had to get Ram Man. I had to get Beast Man. You know?
And there were some, like, real cheap ones, like Faker, which was just, like, him in a different color mode.
I have Faker.
Mold.
I have that still, to this day. It's actually behind you.
What? You have Faker?
Yeah.
Holy shit, you do have Faker. Well, the original Faker, though, was really just...
Look at that one. Good.
I'll put it on the Instagram.
Yeah, put it on the Instagram. Bring it out.
The original Faker was... just a way to reuse the same mold.
Yeah, and it was smart.
Well, this leads me into, have you watched The Toys That Made Us?
Of course.
I was waiting a year for The Toys That Made Us. I heard about it when it first was announced, and I've been waiting for it. They released the first four episodes, Star Wars, Master Universe, Barbie, and G.I. Joe.
It really is a brilliant...
You watched them all?
Oh, yeah, twice. It really is a brilliant... Is it a documentary series? Is it an investigative series?
It's a documentary series, sure. I've also watched them twice.
Which one was the most interesting, you think?
Ooh, that's a really great question. I thought I wasn't going to enjoy the Barbie episode just because I didn't play with Barbies as a kid.
And I remember when you texted me that I have to watch this.
Yeah.
You were like, do yourself a favor. Do not skip over the Barbie
episode. Right, because I had seen it at that point. Because you think, okay, Barbie, what can it be? And then you find out that Barbie was based on Lily...
Who was
a prostitute German comic, and the Lily doll, which they completely ripped off for the first Barbie, was basically just a prostitute toy. The woman who founded Mattel with her husband, she was indicted and kicked out of the company for cooking the books for Mattel. The guy they call the father of Barbie, he had a sex dungeon and was married like five times, and the woman from Mattel is Ruth Handler.
Yes.
She would be like, she would take a truck of Mattel toys and drive them somewhere and be like, all right, and then like say that she sold them. I was really surprised at the storied history of Barbie.
So Barbie was created by, was co-created by Ruth Handler.
And Jack Ryan.
And Jack Ryan.
Well, one thing that you see a lot in the episodes of The Toys That Made Us, is that because it's not like movies where things are credited, when there's a successful toy, people fight over who gets credit. In almost every episode, Barbie, He-Man, G.I. Joe, there's multiple people saying, no, it's mine, I created it, I deserve credit.
See, but Jack Ryan was smart enough to know that this thing is going to take off, so I want a small percentage of the royalties.
Right.
Which at the time, the handlers would thought, like, whatever, this ain't really going to...
Right. So, yeah, especially the husband, because he had no faith in it.
No faith in the toy whatsoever.
But even Jack Ryan, I mean, what vision does it take to take the Lily doll that's just take its nipples off and then go, let's make it as a kid's toy?
No, I think that's where people misunderstand. We're talking about with Jack Ryan, he would create the articulation. Stuff that would come down years later. The way her arms would move, the way her hips would move.
Yeah.
The way she would bend.
Yeah.
Like those things that they still use today was the original concept from Jack Ryan.
Right.
Ruth Handler was the one that saw the prostitution Lily doll and thought to herself...
No, I think Ryan saw it.
No, it was Ruth. Ruth and her husband went on a family vacation. They went overseas.
Uh-huh.
They saw the doll.
But no, there's a scene in the episode because every
That's an opening.
Every episode has an opening with...
Yeah, that's a comedic thing.
No, but they have him showing it to her. Those are all... It's comedic openings.
No, see, this is... Listen, film professor, this is what they did. They show the opening.
Right.
The opening is shown to be comedic levy.
Right, but it's not based
But he didn't bring her the doll. She was the one that saw the doll overseas. So when she brought the doll back, he was an engineer working for Mattel.
First of all, he
brought the doll for the nipples. All he did was just shave off the nipples, but everything was still created as the doll originally.
First of all, fallback, number one.
You understand?
Number two, I understand the
point of
a comedic cold open.
Are you sure?
But a comedic cold open is not entirely fictional.
Mm-hmm.
It's the facts in it, at least according to whoever created that show, are that he brought it up. But either way, it existed.
During a trip in Europe in 1956 with her children, Barbara and Kenneth, Ruth Handler came across a German doll named Lily. The adult figure was exactly what Handler had in mind, so she purchased three of them.
That's what Wikipedia wants you to believe.
This is fact. This is Bible.
That's Wikipedia. Was Barbie your favorite episode?
It was number two. First one for me is He-Man because I'm a He-Man guy.
That was mine too.
They started off with Star Wars out the gate. You got to come correct.
I think you needed to because it changed the game so much.
Star Wars changed the toy game. If it wasn't for Star Wars, you wouldn't have the 3¾-inch toys that made G.I. Joe a success.
But Playmobil had already had toys of that thing. See, I like the documentary and I like its tone. It's got a fun tone, a nostalgic tone. It's got a really cool aesthetic where like they'll show old clips around like a TV set from like the 50s and you'll see
toys
like
around right. Them. Yeah.
But I have a few problems with the show itself, which is they're kind of fast and loose with like who gets the credit for things. You know, they tell a story, but if you really look at it, and I've seen it so many times now, it's like, okay, these Americans are fighting over credit for it, but it's like the creator of Lily deserves more credit than I think they're giving. And my other problem with the series, and tell me if you agree, is that they really glossed over manufacturing the products, which is usually foreign labor.
See, the way they handled the Lily doll specifically, I think that they gave it enough credit because, all right, we really don't need to know that it was a doll based on a sexual comic book or, you know, a thing where dudes would most likely probably got off.
But why not? I mean, she saw the product in a different country.
Yeah, but they talked about that. I think that was enough.
They did, but then it sort of venerates Ruth. I feel like Mattel, if you watch the G.I. Joe episode as well, Mattel seemed to like have their like hooks into this series.
Oh, it was pure Mattel.
Yeah, Mattel seemed – and I like that.
Well, it's split between the two conglomerates, Hasbro and Mattel. There's no other – like you have newer toy manufacturers now that are nowhere near.
Yeah, where's McFarlane? Where's Todd McFarlane?
I don't think that's ever going to be one.
Maybe season three.
You think?
If they keep going.
I don't know.
The Toys That Made Us Spawn episode.
I mean, I was never a big Spawn toy guy.
He was the guy who said, why can't they be, like, really nice? Why can't they be, like, molds like statues?
I think, yeah, that. Now, if they wanted to take that approach and talk about where the toy now wasn't just a toy, but it's a piece to be displayed within your house.
Yeah.
I think that is a really good episode.
Yeah.
But just as the kids to play with them, you're not going to give a kid, oh my God, here's a McFarlane place.
I like the toy looking toys. That's why, like with the Star Wars toys now, I don't collect the black series. I collect the 3 3/4 inches because you could bang them around a little bit. You could play with them a little bit. I actually liked in the Star Wars episode, they were interviewing Steve Sansweep. He's like the biggest collector of Star Wars memorabilia. He was in the episode.
Which one? The Obi Ranch?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Ranch Obi Wan, yeah.
Can we go there?
I don't think he just allows people in, but I would definitely go there.
I want to go there.
I like in the episode, you see him like playing around with stuff, and he's like, yeah, some collectors, they don't touch their stuff, but I feel like this stuff is for fun. This is toys.
Yeah, but he also has one to rock and then several to stock.
That's true. That's true. But I guess my overall point is, because I was the one who brought up the McFarlane new style figures, I actually prefer the old style figures. I prefer the He-Mans that are like chunky and you could bang them together. And
oh, like the figure that I have?
Yeah. I like
toys. But even though that's new articulation.
Right. This is the classic series where they would like reimagine the originals.
Yeah, I bought that from a Comic-Con.
I have from this series Gwildor from the movie.
I have an original Gwildor. You know what we got to do?
The movie.
You know what we got to do one episode? Shit, we're doing it now.
Emilio is digging in his closet. I'm seeing his sneaker collection.
We'll talk about that one episode.
Speaking of foreign labor, what are you digging up? What is this? I see you've got a blue New York City recycling bin. What is in here? Oh, my God. I've got Panthor. Oh, Panthor.
Guess who has the He-Man reboot from 89?
Oh, my God. He-Man in space. These were awful.
Terrible.
I had this, too. Wow.
And then I wanted to start making my own at one point because this He-Man figure was totally destroyed. So I put Battle Armor
He-Man. We're going to put all this on Instagram. Can you put the light on?
Yeah. So I had Battle Armor He-Man with Horax arms.
Oh, wow. So you were like modding them yourself.
I was trying to. Yeah, look, I have a Cringer.
I love that our show is basically devolved to just grown men playing with toys on a podcast.
I have Battle Armor Ready Skeletor.
Battle Armor was the best. That was the one where you hit their chests and it would like spin and you would see like the violence of it.
I mean, you could tell what I was into as a kid.
I wish I had this stuff. Oh, he's a Batman.
I have tons of Batman in there. I even have toys from the Chuck Norris cartoon line.
Oh my God. All right, I'm going to just play with these toys, and that's the end of the episode. No. One of the amazing things from the He-Man episode is they talk about they tell you the numbers that they made, and it was insane. They started in like 84, right? Mm-hmm. 84, 85, 86 was like 84, they expected to make a certain amount, and they like tripled that. And then 85 was more, and 86 was more. Like literally out of nowhere, they had a gigantic hit. From before that, all they had was Potato Head.
Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah, which is you had to provide your own potato in those days. It was just the things that you would – it was just the noses and stuff.
Well, they had Mr. Potato Head. Then came Barbie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they really didn't have other things.
He-Man was a huge boon for them.
Yeah, it was huge.
And they had 3 huge years, and then it falls off.
Well, they were looking at something that – they needed something to – run parallel with Barbie for the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw...
But they also were trying to compete with Star Wars.
Which was bottoming out because Lucas wasn't going to do no more movies.
Well, that's another question I have for you.
So once that came out, they were like, okay, so let's combine everything.
Yeah.
They thought, let's combine sorcery, let's combine science, let's combine space.
Like, let's take the Frank Frazetta style of, like,
Conan the Barbarian. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of old Scalds. I don't know if you've you know, where it was, like, Moorcock and Howard, where they would tell these, like, sword and sorcery.
Yeah.
And I love reading those books.
Yeah.
And you make, like, this one Mishagog of everything. And it's He-Man. And even the way they told the story.
Good use of Yiddish there, by the way.
Fist bump.
They had 3 years on top, and then they fell off.
I think they had 4 on top, and then by 87, the economy just bottomed out in He-Man.
So my question to you is, why do you think it is? In the interviews, there seem to be a bunch of different theories.
I'm not listening to any of what those dudes are saying. First off, they suck their own dicks.
Yeah, it's amazing, those guys.
Which is cool. They got to, because listen to me. They created a demand, And they created a hype.
By the way, none of these guys, the guy who was like big on like, he's got to be bigger. That guy's never seen the inside of a gym. He's like this old, skinny old man. He's like, he's got to be big.
But he's a rock star though.
Yeah, of course he is.
But he's a rock
star. Well, let's go through some of the theories, right? One of the theories is that they blame She-Ra because they felt that She-Ra ruined the brand for boys, which is kind of bullshit. Another theory was the failure of the movie. Even though you and me love the movie.
I love that movie as a kid.
Yeah. And then another theory, which maybe is the one I believe in, is that they stopped making the original like line, like the original wave, like the He-Man and the Skeletor. So if you'd go to the store, all you'd see is like all the periphery characters. And one of the people on the show interviewed says that that's why he thinks the line failed, because you couldn't start from the beginning again.
Well, I just think they oversaturated where Star Wars had, in its Kenner run, 92.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
92 pieces. 92 figures. That's
Which
it.
Which is a crazy amount.
92 is a lot, but it's still tangible to Luke, Leia, Han, Chewie, Vader.
Right, right.
You can always get those.
Right, right, right.
Then if you want to branch off and get Stormtrooper this,
right, right, right,
Gun Commander that,
right,
you could do,
and
some.
They had them all out together. It was like crazy,
but they had a movie though, so those things were
and
set
every
in stone.
3 years would be a new movie.
Yeah,
so even if it would dip, it would come back.
It would, yeah. See, it would circle back.
He-Man,
you couldn't circle back with He-Man.
Well, you know what? These guys talk about it like they don't know what happened, but it's like, listen, you're toy makers. You had 3 or 4 years as rock stars making billions of dollars. You think you're going to do that forever? I mean, other than Barbie and maybe G.I. Joe, there's really no series that lasted forever. Even Star Wars had dips where they weren't doing it.
But
you know,
He-Man
was going to be done at some point.
But see, but I think they started to insult the parents' intelligence. You and I have sat and watched tons of Masters of the Universe together. It is one big infomercial.
Well, the best was they were talking about basically on the fly with like a toy chain. They were like, well, you don't have – it's coming with a comic book, but kids don't read comic books. And then just off the top of his head, he goes, oh, we didn't tell you we're doing a TV show. Star Wars was make the Star Wars movies, then the toys, content, then merchandise. They wanted the Star Wars model, but they did it backwards. They did toy, and then they said, okay, every toy will include a comic. And then they said, no, that's not good enough. We have to do a TV series.
Well, the comic wasn't even what the TV show represented.
Yeah, it's not canon.
There was no Prince Adam. He-Man was a barbaric nomad.
Right. And it was more violent.
Very violent.
The comic.
I wish I can get my hands on those still.
I think they have them.
I think we most likely had those as kids.
Oh, yeah.
But discarded them.
Oh, yeah. I would look at it for a minute and then throw it away.
I don't even think and I had so much weird Masters of the Universe stuff.
What was your favorite? Do you have a favorite Masters Universe figure from the time?
This too.
Yeah.
Man in Arms.
Yes, he was awesome.
Because you could take off the armor and put the armor on.
Yeah, he was great.
And I always loved Ram Man.
Ram Man.
Because
he was functional.
Because you could press down, and he would shrink down, and then you would press a button, and he would spring up.
Yeah. Toyetic.
It was very toyetic.
Toyetic. That's
which
a word
a
created by... Yeah, that's a term created by the head of Kenner. Toyetic.
Which is smart.
Yeah.
Look, my Orko is always on display.
Yeah, absolutely.
As much creative ingenuity as He-Man and the creators of Masters of the Universe had and their brilliant marketing campaign, they weren't doing anything that Edward Bernays said we weren't doing years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So who is the godfather of modern advertising? Right. So if you don't know who Edward Bernays is, like
the creator,
step it up. He created bacon and eggs being synonymous with breakfast.
He got women to smoke. When smoking was typically a male activity, he said, half the people aren't smoking. Let me make it cool for them to smoke. And, of course, he's the nephew of Sigmund Freud.
The funny part was that they took those big gym action figures and made him even bigger.
Right.
Because they were like, well, we have to put muscle on He-Man.
Right, He-Man, like, didn't they say, like, if He-Man were a real person, he'd weigh, like, 700 pounds or
750
something?
Pounds.
Let's get The Rock in a He-Man remake. What's holding that up? They've been trying to do that for years.
I only think it would work as a cartoon.
And
they tried with the cartoon, and the cartoon failed the second time around.
I think... Well, it had like a season or two. I think you could do it. I think you could do a He-Man live action again. If you really like...
I thought the first one was fantastic. You are not beating that. Everybody wanted to shit...
I mean, they spent a lot of time on Earth.
Listen, they wanted to shit on Dolph Lundgren.
Right.
But
he was good.
Who was more perfect just coming off the Rocky. He was literally just coming off Rocky IV.
Yeah.
Handsome, fantastic shape, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He-Man, or the idea of what He-Man is, you can't be that size and do the things that he does. You need to have long, sinewy muscle.
Yeah.
And the way Dolph Lundgren played He-Man, or even the way he looked for He-Man,
yeah,
he was still over 200 pounds.
I love
the movie. He was 275 in that movie. Do you understand how big 275 pounds is?
It's a massive
universe. On a guy
universe.
That's fucking 6'8"? That is massive.
And not
the
only
Rock
that.
The Rock is 6'5", 315 right now. Do you understand how big Dolph Lundgren and The Rock were right. at their peaks? See, this is what they really didn't talk about, but you know they were hinting towards.
Uh-huh.
Where they wanted to buy the rights to Conan the Barbarian.
That's the story I always heard, that it was supposed to be tied into the Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan movie.
But you couldn't sell that to kids, because that's not a kid.
But is that where – did you – have you ever read anything that said that?
Yes, I did. It was the Masters of the Universe, He-Man, and the Rise and Fall of a Billion-Dollar Idea.
So why is that not in the episode at all?
Because I just think they just want to – well, they if you look at it, they said
– it's sort of – vaguely yeah. kind of implied.
Because they couldn't sell that. You can't sell that to kids. That movie had sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the first one.
Yeah, that's true.
And thievery. You can't have that.
It even, also could have been a licensing issue,
I
too.
Think it was a total licensing issue. So that's what they... So they were like, you know what? Let's create our own.
I don't know if you said it or not. Why do you think it failed?
Because I think there was just too much... There was too much product. There was over 500 Masters of the Universe figures.
Okay, yeah.
There was too much product. A lot of bullshit. All you really needed was He-Man, Skeletor, Man-at-Arms, Teela, Orko, Evil Lyn, Beastman, Merman. You don't need... No, you don't need Stratos. You don't need... No. Or, you know what? If you want to keep Stratos, which he's in the original eight,
yeah.
then you just keep it the original eight, and then you can always recycle the original eight. As long as you can get that original eight,
yeah.
you're fine. Your toy line will always succeed, because then you can do your, you know, your offshoots.
Yeah.
But that's what they didn't do.
What do you think of...
I didn't have the original He-Man.
You didn't?
No, I had the Battle Armor He-Man.
I didn't really either. My older brother did. Because I was born in 1983 and He-Man was 84. So, like, I had them because my older brother did.
Yeah.
I sort of inherited them.
For some strange reason, I don't know why, around 85... I guess, and there's pictures, literally, on my Instagram page of me having tons of He-Man figures as a toddler. And my mother would say you would be glued to the television.
Uh-huh.
You wouldn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
But you would be glued to the television just watching this.
He-Man. Thundercats, too.
He-Man, Thundercats. But Thundercats came, and this is why they have to do more.
Mm.
Because I think He-Man and Thundercats and Voltron and all this stuff stemmed from that business model that Mattel started.
Yeah, I think He-Man's the beginning of that model.
It has to be. But again,
which is, you know, as much as I love it, I mean, it's the most perfect 80s greedy
capitalism at its finest.
You know, there's very, you know, it becomes artistic at some point because you've got creative people.
I think it's very artistic.
But it, you know, it begins about how do we sell toys without a movie? We'll just do that
I
next.
I think the original concept art for Beastman as a bear.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I thought that was really good.
This kind of blew my mind. They were saying that the action figures are actually loss leaders and that the money is made on the vehicles and stuff.
Which is smart. They said that for all of them, though.
Yeah, but
they said that even for Barbie, where if you sell the doll cheap,
right.
but you can sell the accessories for more money. And
right.
that's what keeps
that
them coming
That blew my mind,
in.
Though. I never realized that figures themselves.
Yeah, but you're looking at it from now as a collector.
Right.
Where the figures actually
to
have
them,
more
it wasn't
worth.
Even like that valuable.
It wasn't. It wasn't. If you were to go back, if we were.
It was like the little bit the drug dealer gives you for free, and then you want more. You come back for that.
You come back for that taste.
Yeah, you come back for that skull, Castle Grayskull.
The most expensive things were the playsets.
Right.
Specifically G.I. Joe.
Oh, that one? The
that
aircraft carrier?
That aircraft carrier was
$91. At the time.
At the time. That would go now for hundreds if they redid it.
Or more. I got that. It was a beautiful toy.
Well, let me tell you something. The construction on those toys... Absolutely brilliant. I also got a kick out of the fact when they were like, well, who's going to buy a matted black action figure?
Right.
Snake Eyes.
Right.
Which became their most popular selling toy.
But literally they created him because they were like, to save money, we either need to take a little bit of the detail and paint off of every figure or have one figure with no paint at all. And that's how they created
Snake Eyes. And we're just
going to sell
Snake Eyes.
It's kind of amazing.
That was another one that was just like, okay, wait, let's throw some shit on the wall.
Yeah.
Let's see if it sticks. Let's take the original concept from the 50s.
Right.
Now let's.
Which was the same concept. There was the same model as Barbie, which is you buy a doll and then we're going to keep selling you clothes to redress the doll.
Which is smart.
Right. It was after the.
Well, if you see what they did, and it was always with the trends, and this is where it's smart, the idea of patriotism always comes back.
Right.
Going into Vietnam, you didn't have that.
Right, right, right.
So that's when the decline of that doll happened.
Right. No one wanted to play with G.I. Joe.
No, because it just wasn't the in thing. They stopped the line.
Right.
Then it comes back around with Reaganomics.
Right.
And
I like that the episode starts with that Reagan speech, and it's like that Reagan America, fuck yeah,
America.
Adrenaline.
Yeah, let's do it.
And also He-Man and Star Wars were a big influence on how they could reboot G.I. Joe, not as a doll this time, but as a small thing, and also have the Cobras.
See, but that's the
have evil bad guys.
You have to have evil bad guys,
right?
Like they were like, well, who's he gonna fight? Oh, you just buy more toys.
Yeah,
no,
which
dude,
is stupid.
They could fight their other toys in the toy box.
Right, right. That was what they originally thought.
See, and this is the genius. Where did that idea come from?
I don't know.
Marvel Comics.
Really?
Because when they went to Marvel, they were like, all right, well, who's he fighting? We don't know. Sit back. We'll take care of this.
Uh-huh.
So Cobra Commander is a product of Marvel.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Right, because there was the comic. There was a comic.
They needed to fight somebody.
Right.
So this just affirms to me that Marvel does everything better.
Well, Stan the Man.
Well, I don't think Stan the Man even.
I think he just turned 900 the other day.
God bless.
God bless.
God bless.
He's going strong.
But yeah, that whole thing was just done from soup to nuts was absolutely fantastic. And it targeted the ones that just hit the main vein. I didn't need to know about the Slinky. I didn't need to know about Silly Putty.
No, it was totally like for us. It was 80s nostalgia. You know, the toys that made us, we're the us in that title. these are the toys that made you and me.
Yeah. My mother just walked in. Ma, we're talking about there was a documentary series called The Toys That Made Us. Now, there was at one point, my mother used to work at a toy store called Playworld Toys. And for some reason, they had the original Ken and Barbie figures. And
really?
They didn't know how to sell them. Ma, could you come in real quick and tell this story about how you created whatever it was? What was it? Was it a note? Because you guys sold this toy for like Ken and Barbie for an extremely big amount of money.
A classic Barbie, and the store was going out of business, and it was had to be sold. She was beautiful, so they couldn't get rid of it. So I put it up on a stand, and I kind of like raffled it off, going once, going twice, the best bidder, and I had people bidding for it because really, had I known what it would probably be worth, I would have bought it myself.
Right.
So at the time, I think they took her for $100 with the Kate Gorgeous she was. Very vintage Barbie, yeah.
You probably get a lot more than that now.
Oh, my God, yeah. She was never touched. She was beautiful. I should have known. But then again, I had two sons. What was I thinking of? A Barbie
doll? Right.
I mean, I used to play. I had original Barbies when I was a kid. And when we used to go to my grandmother's down in Little Italy over there, there used to be a clothes factory, like a material factory there, and she used to get scraps of materials and things like that. And we used to make the clothes for her out of little scraps of the materials, me and my sister. You know, when you could buy the clothes, but we found it more...
you made your own.
Yeah, it was really nice. But I didn't have any girls, so I couldn't save the Barbies. But
that could have paid for your college education.
Yeah.
No, too bad.
I would have kept... Forget about his college education. I would have bought me a new house.
Yeah.
But anyway, toys. I worked in a toy store. There was the Power Rangers. Forget about the loins for the Power Rangers. I mean, I used to get first dibs on everything, and I did.
Yeah.
I used to bring them home, every one of them. But there's lines out the store for these
things. Yeah, it was hard to
things.
Get those.
And Lion-O and Panthro and all that stuff.
Thundercats.
Yeah. The sword. One time I went to was sleeping, and the sword was on the bed, and it lit up under me. Oh, what is this? It worked a lot of money. The boys still have a lot of their stuff up in the attic, though.
Yeah, it's got
Grayskull. No, they got Grayskull, the castle, and everything up
you
there.
You do?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, we gotta take all that stuff down. We gotta do a photo shoot.
And they even got the Ghostbuster.
So see, it was always a kid's dream to have one of their parents.
I know. You had the inside, you know, line on Power Rangers. I remember when Power Rangers was big, I could not find them anywhere.
And
my mother had a job, my father had a job. They weren't. What'd you say?
We didn't even watch the show at first. My mother got us the toys thinking like, oh, my son's probably watched this. So that Christmas, we had the entire run and the Zords.
Yeah. No, what's weird about those, the Power Rangers went back to like the G.I. Joe doll model because they were big.
Yeah. They were huge.
Yeah.
Then they scaled down again. But you didn't want to get those dolls. What you wanted to do was you wanted to get the Zords.
Yeah, the Zords.
It all goes back to, again, accessories and vehicles.
Yeah. We should take a break and play with these toys a little bit.
You want to?
Yeah. Time for our
obsessions.
What are you obsessed with right now?
All right, so this is the funny thing. I have been obsessed with finding crew t-shirts. Do you know what those are?
No.
Stage crew.
Being a roadie. Oh, like a roadie.
Yeah. Now, a good friend of mine works for the Barclay Center.
Uh-huh.
And knows I'm a huge WWE fan.
Mm-hmm.
And has gotten me several ring crew t-shirts that the crew uses when they install anything for WWE, whether it's the ring, the lights, the screens, whatever. Every time WWE has a pay-per-view at the Barclays Center, I get a crew t-shirt from him.
Now, what would a crew t-shirt look like?
I'll show you. Would you like to see one?
Well, describe it for the listener.
It is a t-shirt, but then they would have the...
It's not just a t-shirt you could buy at the stand, though.
No, you cannot buy these. No, these are things you cannot buy.
You have to be working.
You have to work for WWE.
Well, you got a lot.
Yeah, look. Yeah.
Let's
see.
So
now, wrestling culture is odd because now there is a resurgence in nostalgia and retro gear.
This is an old one.
This is from Caesar's Palace. This is from 91.
WWF.
Yes. This is when they had their WrestleMania
black.
9. Oh,
so they're all black.
No, it's my favorite color.
Because they're... But that's all, but isn't it also because it's like you're working?
Yeah, you're working, yeah.
Do you wear these?
Yes, I do.
That's pretty sweet.
Right? So you also
got... But what if you got guacamole on it? I'd be afraid to wear these.
No, I'm good. I'm a gentleman. I wear hoodies most of the time underneath.
You're a gentleman.
On top of everything. So this one is from The Weeknd.
Uh-huh.
The R&B crooner. And it has the XO, which is his line.
Uh-huh.
And it says on the back, just big letters, crew.
Yeah, okay, so a lot of them say crew.
You have to, yeah. See, a lot of things now with wrestling t-shirts in general, the whole idea, like we covered before, is nostalgia. Nostalgia this and nostalgia that. And it's always about having exclusives in first and rare.
This is an exclusive.
So this is an exclusive, and this is a rarity because not many people have wrestling roadie t-shirts. Yeah. And then if you look on the back of these things, which is, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look on the back, it has the actual name of the pay-per-view and the dates.
Okay.
So this one that I'm showing you right now is from July 24th, 2016, from their Battleground pay-per-view.
Yes.
So I'm lucky. I have a new one from SummerSlam this year, which I'm absolutely in love with because it has the SummerSlam logo.
Uh-huh.
And because I was at that pay-per-view this year. My buddy, look, this one from Fastlane.
Uh-huh.
I mean, so I'm lucky.
That's awesome.
I'm real lucky that he puts these on the side. Because these things go for big money. If you look on wrestling shirts for sale on Instagram, complete and total just boost up the price.
Is there any 60, like classic 70, one you would want?
Yeah, there's actually one from their camera crew days in the 90s where it has the logo, the WWF logo, but then it also has one of those old school camcorders. And it says crew, and then it says 1991 Rampage Tour. Their Rampage Tour was overseas.
Okay.
It was all over the United Kingdom. Yeah. That's what I want. So I'm looking for that.
That's pretty awesome. That's a pretty sweet collection.
That's my new thing that I'm scouring the internet
for. Have you ever thought about framing them? You know, like when people frame t-shirts? That could look nice.
Well, I was thinking of not doing that because I will get a new one every time.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I would frame them. Now, if I had one that just said, like, let's say crew on it, and by chance I had certain wrestlers.
Well, what if you had your, like, the classic one you really want?
It would depend on, like, who I would have to autograph it. Maybe, like, Hulk Hogan, maybe Ric Flair, you know, guys of that nature. Bret the Hitman Hart, Shawn Michaels. If I could get something autographed by Vince McMahon.
Okay.
Let's say a WWE crew t-shirt.
He scares me.
He scares me, too. I've met him. If I can legitimately get his autograph,
yeah,
I'm definitely framing that. Hands down, no question, t-shirt goes up there.
Deviating off of your obsession for a minute, is XFL coming back?
There was a rumor that Vince McMahon is selling off huge shares because he has company stock.
So XFL was, he tried to, in what was it? When was it? The 90s?
Yeah, late 99, early
2000. He tried to do his own football league, and it kind of failed miserably.
It did.
But
they had a television deal.
But the rumor is what? He might.
He wants to bring it back, yeah.
But how does that, what does that have to do with him selling off his stock?
Because you got to finance it. And Vince McMahon.
Oh,
not.
So that's why they think he's doing it.
Yeah, Vince McMahon's not going to bring in other people. You think Vince McMahon wants to bring in? You think Vince McMahon wants to bring in a guy like Mark Cuban?
But because he failed so bad the first time.
I don't know, but the style.
Maybe all the people that are upset about Colin Kaepernick protesting police violence will go and they'll watch the XFL. Vince McMahon's not going to let anybody take a knee. There'll be none of that.
While Vince is a conservative man,
yeah,
he runs a very liberal company.
Yeah, sure.
They have a liberal approach to how they do their television. Right.
Certainly now. I mean, in the 80s, there was a lot of, you know.
I think
there was a lot of stereotype characters that were a little bit
problematic. WWF
was
very, very right-wing. It was good versus evil, them versus us in America.
Very ethnocentric.
Very, and, you know, very xenophobic.
Yeah.
You know, especially
but
when.
But you say it's not like that now.
I don't see that now. Mm-hmm. I think it's more liberal now because I think they have to be very, very sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a billion-dollar business, and they don't want to alienate any fan, especially with growing markets overseas, specifically Saudi Arabia and Dubai and India.
What I was thinking, though, is if he comes out with a conservative, being even more conservative and more rah-rah America than the NFL, he might get, you know,
but then that
the
affects,
Trump voter audience.
But then that affects WWE.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he's still... You can think of Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Randy Savage, Shawn Michaels, Bret the Hitman Hart, Bruno Sammartino, all these guys in certain generations that carved the way for professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. It all goes back to Vince. If you don't have Vince, you don't have the WWF. If you don't have George Lucas, you don't have Star Wars. Mm. That's it.
All right. My obsession for this week is a really amazing book I just read called Spoonbenders.
Wow, you really gotta fucking upstage me. I'm talking about t-shirts and you're talking about literature.
Well, it's fun literature. It's called Spoonbenders. It's by Daryl Gregory. It just came out this year and it's this amazing, you'd love it. All right, imagine
they bend spoons with their minds?
Well, no, that's named after Uri Geller, the psychic in the, what was it, 70s and 80s, who said he would bend spoons and stuff, who was the Amazing Randy, one on Johnny Carson, and together him and Johnny Carson basically showed him to be a fraud. So that's what it's named after, but actually no one bends spoons in it. You're a fan of This Is Us. Imagine This Is Us, right?
Yeah.
But if there was magic involved. So you've got the...
So Jack and Rebecca are magicians.
Right. Basically, here's the story. All right, it's the story of the amazing Telemachus family, okay? And they're Greeks. And the father, he is a magician. He's a con artist. He's a card shark. He's a poker mechanic.
So he's a swindler.
Right, exactly. He does fake magic. He, trying to get a little bit of money out of the government in the 50s, goes and becomes part of this, like, study, okay? While he's there, he meets the love of his life, Maureen.
Rebecca.
Maureen is a psychic. She's the strongest psychic in the world. She actually helps them win the Cold War. And they fall in love, this con artist and this real powerful woman, and they have three kids. And their kids all have powers.
The big three.
Exactly. There's two boys and a girl. One of the kids is a human lie detector. So Irene, when you speak to her, she knows if you're telling the truth or not. Well, she knows if you believe you're telling the truth or not. Then you've got Eddie, who is telekinetic. He can move things with his mind. And then you've got Buddy, who is the most powerful of the three, and they think he's, like, disabled, but really he's living in all of time at once because he's got perfect memories of the future and the past. So he just doesn't know where he is on the timeline of the universe. So he doesn't say anything because he's afraid he'll screw up all of the universe. And so you've got those characters, and you keep going back and forth between them as little kids as they were doing a stage show as the Amazing Telemachuses, and them as fuck-up adults. Eddie is in debt with the mob, and Irene lost her job, and Buddy can't get a job because he's messed up. They're all living in the dad's house, and it's like they're all messed up, but they all have these powers. And then in the future chapters, Irene has a son, and the son realizes that when he jerks off, he can leave his body.
So can I.
So his scumbag uncle gets him to try to rob the mob with him because he's like, look, all you got to do is you'll just
jerk off.
Right. Yeah. You'll jerk off. You'll fly in. You'll see what the what the combination is for their. It's amazing. It's funny. It's a brilliantly written. Touching. Really amazing.
You gotta give it to me when you're done.
It's really good. That's mine for this week.
I love it. I love it.
Do you feel good about this episode?
I mean, toys, t-shirts, out-of-body experiences from jerking off. I mean, this has been a fun action-packed
adventure. It felt good to have a regular episode.
For more information on who we are and what we do, go to our Instagram page, PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. Follow us. There's a lot of stuff. We're going to show my t-shirts. Mike's going to post a book.
Yep.
We're going to show some toys that I dug up today for you guys.
Yes,
so
yes.
There's a lot in here. So now we're going to kick it to our guy and yours.
The drummer of the Electric Mayhem.
Sometimes movies and television adventure series like this one make it seem as though shooting a gun, fighting, and taking chances are fun and exciting things to do. And what's more, the good guys never get hurt. But in real life, people do get hurt, even killed when they fight or use guns. Make-believe can be fun, and there's nothing wrong with imagining great adventures. But never forget that when it's the real thing, someone can get hurt. Even the good guys. Even you.